Andrew, I know I talked to you briefly last week. You just got back from Europe from the European Optical Conference, and we just thought maybe we'd kind of start out with an update and your key takeaways from ECOC.
So I was in Dusseldorf 2 weeks ago. Every year there's a optical conference in Europe. It's similar to OFC. It's a little smaller in scale. It's focused exclusively on components, and there's a little bit more of a technical bend to it. So it's a great opportunity to go meet with a lot of the component suppliers and also some of their customers who mostly are on the engineering side. I think, if you look at the high-level takeaways from the conference this year, I mean, there were some interesting things that I learned on, some specific areas, but the real big trends were everyone was talking about the Chinese volume and what happens next. And so, we can talk about that today and how things are shaping up for 2017. There's also a lot of activity going on with coherent DSPs from various players and people beginning to position themselves for the next technology leap, which is going to be 400G coherent. There's also some activity around direct detect 100G opportunities, similar to what Inphi announced at OFC with the Colors product. And then we had a lot of discussions about CFP2 ACO, the ongoing ramp there, and as well as the end markets for that product and how that's starting to ramp in a lot of these new DCI systems. So that's about as quick as I can summarize it, Troy. I don't know
Yeah,
where you'd
that's
like to
cool.
start,
No,
but.
that's fine. Let's just start at the beginning. I mean, China's been the most topical, and I can tell you from the analyst perspective, what Wall Street fears the most is that, China bookings got so high so fast, right, that they may not be able to grow from here, right? So, I know all these guys talk about, the 5-year broadband plan that they have, and I agree, but, will years 2, 3, and 4 be as high as years, 1 was as far as the spending level? So, your insight into China would be very helpful right now.
Well, I think before we go into specifics, I just wanted to share a little bit of my experience with what's happened in China over the last couple of years, last couple of decades. And you get these bursts in terms of spending. And every time it happens, everyone says, "Oh my gosh, there's no way that this is sustainable." Yet it goes on and on much longer than anyone would have expected. I mean, the areas that I think of specifically are the DSL market. That was huge in China and went on for a long time. And then later on, the fiber to the home market. And this feels a lot like that to me, where there's a sudden shift to a new technology. And the expectation is that this is just a short-term type of bump, but in the end, it's a long run for some time. Specifically on China, I met with Huawei and I talked with a lot of their suppliers 2 weeks ago, and I came away with the conclusion that there's not going to be a drop-off in terms of 100G purchases in the second half of this year or into next year. But you're certainly not going to see the same kind of year-over-year percentage gains that we've experienced in the last 12 months. And
Right. So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, so you said there's not going to be a drop off. You expect it to be stable on a year-over-year basis out of China?
Well, the consensus is that it's going to be at least 30% next year. Some people say 30%. Others say at least 30%. When I talked to Huawei and I ran the 30% number past them, they agreed to it pretty quickly. They didn't. There was no hesitation in terms of that kind of number when I spoke to the folks there.
So you're talking about 30% revenue growth next year for the
30%,
optical?
no, 30% port growth. That's an
30%
important
port.
distinction.
Okay. And you're speaking specifically about 100G ports, right?
100G ports, correct.
All right, I'm just writing this down. So, all right, so expecting growth next year in the ports, are you expecting ASP erosion to offset that, or are we going to have revenue growth at this level?
That I don't know. I don't have a good idea of pricing going into next year. I mean, that's obviously the magic number, but I don't know how that's going to shape up. I think here's the important thing, is if you go look at, and this is an important detail that I learned, the growth that's coming next year, this 30% unit growth, at least in the case of Huawei, what they guided me towards was that this growth would be mostly in the CFP DCO format, is that they expected the shipments of their traditional 100G line cards, which are built primarily with their own DSPs as well as NTT Electronics, and discrete components from a number of suppliers, including Oclaro and Neo Photonics. They were saying that that business is going to be flattish going into next year, and that they really expected the unit growth when it turns on to come from the CFP DCO market. And they're trying to convert their production over to using these pluggable coherent modules. Now, it's unlike the rest of the world, which is ACO, they're really targeting DCO, which is where the DSP is inside the CFP itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so 30% growth, but that growth's coming from DCOs, you're saying.
Yeah, so I think the key thing here is, from a component supplier perspective, you really need to be designed into that new DCO module that Huawei is building if you want to continue to participate in the unit growth. Because other than that, it looks like things are going to get kind of flattened out.
All right. And so, I got a follow-up on that. Who's got the most exposure? But then also, then I got another one after that. Go ahead. Who do you think has the most exposure to that form factor? I mean, Acacia sounds like it'd be the one, but...
Acacia is not playing any role in the Huawei DCO, as far as I can tell. They may be supplying a silicon photonics front end in that module. It wasn't clear to me if that was something they were doing for the existing CFP module, or if that was something that Huawei was going to be looking at a year from now when they cost reduce the CFP DCO and go to CFP2 DCO. But my impression is that Acacia was not playing a role in that module.
Okay. So then the DSP, they're getting, it's either from HiSilicon, their internal R&D, or any else?
Yeah, they're planning to use HiSilicon. I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect that it's, they've designed that in conjunction with some assistance from Clarify. But they're also continuing to work very actively with NTT Electronics.
Okay, NTT. All right, so Andy, you the one who's also, always told me that Huawei has a 1+1 approach, right?
Yep.
They want to internally develop and outsource. Is this going to be a component they outsource, or is this going to be all internally developed with HiSilicon?
For the DSP?
Yep.
No, it was pretty clear talking with them that they're planning to use their own internal DSP development, and they're going to be using NTT Electronics.
Okay. And then I did have a question from a client here. It's what was the 100G port growth this year in China?
Well, the year's not over.
Yeah, that's a good estimate.
I don't have my numbers in front of me, but looking at the first half of this year, was it more than doubled.
Okay, more than doubled. All right. All right, so then if I go back to my question about revenues, so yes, we got 30% growth in units. Those units are shipped in towards DCO form factor. For the most part, we're not going to see any type of pricing erosion near that 30%, so you would expect China spending on optics grows next year.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to predict the pricing with Huawei. I'm not going to do this.
But I don't think it's any close to 30%, right? So...
The suppliers are in a much better position to give comments on that. I think Huawei knows that they're purchasing a huge amount of components, and they have a lot of leverage. And I imagine that this transition to the CFP is, this is an opportunity for them to say, hey, if you want to be, you want to stay on the train, you got to help us out. So, I don't think it's 30%, but I'm sure that I'm sure there's going to be some reductions coming given the big jump in demand. The flip side of that, though, is as everyone knows, is there's not there's not all kinds of capacity sitting around. So it's a question of whether someone wants to sell off that capacity to Huawei at a lower price that they might get somewhere else.
Yeah, fair.
All right. And then sticking to China, have you heard much on China datacom spending initiatives?
I have not. I mean, I've had some discussions surrounding the Google and Microsoft equivalents there, the Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. You know, people there call them the BATs, the BATs. And there's been a lot of movement in terms of technology and vendor selection, but they typically are much more sort of free thinking and aggressive when compared with the traditional carriers, not unlike what we've seen here in the West. And my understanding is that they've been much more interested in CFP2 ACO technology than some of the more traditional telco customers. And for example, they're using Nokia and their pluggable ACO approach. Although I don't think Nokia is actually using true pluggables, but those customers have expressed a lot of interest in that type of approach because they believe there's going to be a higher density that they can realize with it.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Yeah, I want to get one more in on China, and then we can kind of move to another topic. But I've been told that China's going to deploy ROADM. So do you have a thought on the timeline for when? And then more importantly, I guess the key question is, are they going to do a contentionless architecture? Because if they do, that needs more WSS, to my knowledge, and it needs multicast switching. So timeline for ROADM.
I haven't dug into the contentionless question with China. I don't really have any primary knowledge on that. I also don't have a good idea about the timing on the ROADMs. But talking informally with some of the supply chain, I get the sense that both China Telecom and China Mobile are going forward. China Telecom is actually ahead in terms of volume, although China Mobile is very active from an R&D standpoint, and the expectation is that they're gonna kind of catch up. And the only other just interesting thing that I've picked up that I haven't really been able to investigate is, when I talk to the folks from Lumentum, they always talk about China Telecom, and when I talk with the folks from Finisar, they always talk about China Mobile. And I'm just wondering if there's some sort of relationship between the two. Whereas, one particular WSS is related to that particular customer. But that's just anecdotal. I don't know that there's a relationship.
Just so I heard that right, you said Lumentum talks more about China Telco and Finisar talks more about China Mobile.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. All right, so I did get a question from the audience here. It says, why DCO for Huawei? Doesn't it have fundamental heat issues?
Well, just like in every other industry, there's not always rational decisions being made. This is something that they've been very focused on for many years. And I recall having meetings with China Mobile, I think 2 or 3 years ago, and talking about ACO versus DCO, and they were very opposed to ACO and some of the risks and the complexities of that approach. But I think fundamentally one of the things that they like in China is with the DCO approach, they can pull out that module in 2 years and they can plug something else in that does whatever they need it to do. Whereas with the ACO, the DSP is inside and you've really already determined what the function of that line card is going to be. So the DCO gives them some more flexibility that they like, particularly as they start looking at putting this into the metro where maybe they'll have a different CFP with better performance that they want to use at some point in the future. That's one comment that I've heard from the Chinese and why they're looking at DCOs. But even speaking with Huawei, they're very upfront that they're going with DCOs, but when they make the transition to CFP2, which they expect to do next year, they're going to reevaluate the DCO versus ACO and decide what to do.
All right, say that again. So next year they're going to make a decision about CFP2 form factor?
Yeah, I think exactly.
It'll be DCO, okay.
Yeah, so they're going to look into whether they continue to use DCO architectures when they migrate to a CFP2, which is twice the density of the CFP.
Yep, gotcha. All right, that's good. Hey, so I did get another question here from a client. What sort of components will be used inside the wallet or the DCO, specifically lasers, modulators, versus when they buy discrete components?
It's pretty much the same thing. They accept it's inside of a box. There isn't a tremendous difference between the two architectures. The biggest difference is that the DSP and the power envelope that has to live in becomes a lot tighter. And so my guess is that, you know, Huawei's probably had to make some changes to their own DSP in order to get it to work in that sort of environment, or they're planning to use something from NTT Electronics. I think one of the things that's a bit confusing is when you talk to Huawei, they're very adamant that going forward they're going to be using their own DSPs and make that a big part of their own push forward. But if you talk around them inside the supply chain, it's evident that they're still sourcing product from, you know, from other sources, particularly NTT Electronics. And, you know, it may even be possible that they will be purchasing some Acacia CFPs. But, you know, talking directly with Huawei, I did not get that impression.
Okay. All right, fair. So then, and then this is another question from a client. We kind of hit it, but just to go over it, the competitive environment for the DSPs right now. So, you know, it's Acacia.
Yeah, it's an interesting environment for DSPs. You have companies like NTT Electronics, who are still continuing to invest in, you know, multiple DSPs going forward. Acacia is definitely investing, and, you know, Clarify is still out there, you know, looking to continue to provide some, you know, either design expertise to the folks who want to be vertically integrated, as well as their own DSPs. I don't know of anyone else who's, you know, waiting to enter the market beyond those three suppliers. And, you know, outside of that, if you look at the vertically integrated guys, you've got Infinera, you've got Nokia, who just, you know, announced their own coherent DSP that's got some legs still. I would expect that, you know, Ciena's got to make a decision on what they do for next generation DSP next year, and, you know, we hear about what they're going to do. But the big story is really 400G and how you get to 400G and begin to address the shorter distances with a higher baud rate and higher modulation for more bandwidth.
Yep. Okay, fair. All right, why don't we switch gears a little bit now? You know, we hit DCOs pretty thoroughly. Let's jump into ACOs.
Okay.
You know, kind of, I guess, multiple questions there. Can you talk about, you know, competitive environment? Anyone else qualified yet that's, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I spoke with a couple system vendors and, you know, got a pretty good lay of the land on ACOs. Putting together my own internal projections, I think that to date there's been around 5,000 to 6,000 ACO modules shipped, and the vast majority of those have been shipped by Oclaro.
How many numbers again? I'm sorry.
5,000 to 6,000.
5,000 to 6,000.
And
okay, keep going.
And, you know, the vast majority of those have been shipped by Oclaro. Oclaro is really the only supplier right now that can provide 200 gig capable ACOs in any kind of volume. Fujitsu is now, you know, sampling 200 gig ACOs. But talking to their customers, the expectation is they're not going to be able to supply, you know, significant volumes for at least 3 to 6 months. And the same is true for Finisar. The expectation is that Fujitsu will be able to supply more volume before Finisar will.
And why is that?
So well,
first of all, I thought Fujitsu Type 1 and 100G only, so to me this was a new one.
Yeah, Fujitsu is definitely, you know, they're bringing 200 gig to market, but it's going to be, you know, 3 to 6 months before they can really provide any kind of volume.
Let me challenge that 3 to 6 comment. I mean, to go from sampling to volume, if you think how long it took Oclaro, I mean, isn't it more like 9 to 12 months between sampling and volume?
Well, I think there's a difference between, you know, supplying something and then actually shipping it for production. So it may be that they can ramp their production faster than people can qualify it and begin using it.
Okay. Right, that makes
sense. But they've, I mean, Fujitsu, when you look at people who started on ACOs years ago, they were one of the first ones to start. So they've put a lot of wood behind the arrow, and it's just a matter of getting this stuff up and running. But when you talk to their customers, it's, you know, when you're dealing with Japanese suppliers, they take a long time to get the plane running down the runway, but eventually, you know, when it lifts off, it really goes.
Okay. Hey, what about continuing on competition for ACOs, and any thoughts on Acacia's ACO?
Yeah, so from what I understand, they're sampling it now, and the comment that I heard was that it's sort of an alpha product, and it's still a long way away from being, you know, something that, you know, people can really qualify and produce.
Okay. So, and those are really considered the next three, right, for the ACO market? I know there's others that have announced, but...
NeoPhotonics has announced an ACO, and it's a very pragmatic type of product where it's 100 gig only. They're not using any kind of exotic technologies. It's a brute force approach that they feel will produce a product that's, you know, high yield and low cost in the 100 gig market. And the downside is they can't really stretch it to do 200 G. So they're just going to compete in that little niche. That being said, I mean, most of the demand, really all the demand for ACOs is in the 200 gig side of things. That's where it becomes compelling.
Yep. Hey, how big do you think the ACO market is going to be in 2017?
I don't have a specific number on that, but I think you could begin to figure that out by, you know, look at Verizon and what they're going to be purchasing, and then looking at the DCI market that's being served by a number of different suppliers. The big guys are Infinera, Cisco, Coriant, Fujitsu, and missing one. Starting with those, Infinera uses their own in-house technology. Also, there's ADVA, but ADVA is using the Acacia product. And there's a lot of interest and uptake in those platforms. And I think, you know, the ACO is really the lead item for things like the Cisco NCS 1000 and the Coriant Groove platform, as well as Fujitsu. And Fujitsu, from what I understand, is starting to have some success with their product because they're not just going after the DCI market, but they're actively targeting guys like the cable MSOs here in North America, and as well as AT&T.
All right, well, let me go back to another question a statement you had, is that 5,000 to 6,000 ACOs shipped. Was that through, you know, end of Q3 or mid-year or?
End of Q3.
End of Q3. Right. So, and how much do you think Oclaro's manufacturing currently?
I don't know.
They got to be 80-90% of that 5,000 to 6,000, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know they're guarding it pretty closely. But, I mean, could this industry be $250 to $300 million market next year?
Well, let's see. So if we... Let's just say it was, you know, $6,500 a unit. Where does that put us in terms of total units shipped? I'll race you. Yeah, so it's around 45,000 units. Yeah, I'd say that's probably on the upper end of where things would end up.
45, okay. All right, so in fairly clear, Claro's still going to have a dominant share of that because these other guys got to go through quals still and ramp volume capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of these things trace down into specifics like, you know, the new Infinera platform, the Cloud Express 2. If that, you know, if that comes out and captures a lot of the market, that sort of eats into the ACO opportunity. Whereas, you know, if they struggle to get that out and qualified and working, then it increases the ACO opportunity. So there are, and likewise for ADVA and their success with their new platform, which is Acacia-based. So those are really some of the variables that impact, you know, the ACO adoption going into 2017.
Yep. All right, fair. Let me, I'm going to just shift to the next topic. I'm going to look through some of the questions, too, coming in. But let's just hit quickly on WSS and Rotom Line cards. I know we hit a little bit on China. Can you talk about kind of status with Verizon and maybe status of, you know, Finisar at Cisco?
Yeah, so my understanding is that with Verizon, there's already, you know, significant node shipments taking place from Ciena and from Cisco. And, you know, while they're not necessarily recognizing a lot of revenue, they are shipping out product. So I think that the supply chain for those components is really is starting to ramp now.
Any thoughts on Finisar getting certified, qualified at Cisco?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah, we still don't know yet either. So, all right. So Rotoms, DCOs, ACOs. Well, I think Ciena might have been the one company that you forgot to mention. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, for ACO. I mean, they were really the original ACO. I mean, they're the ones that made the format happen and have driven that. And you know, Cisco has extended this product all throughout their whole product line. And you know, my feeling is that Ciena is in the process of doing the same thing. So there's, you know, likely to be new products coming out from Ciena in the next 12 months that are based entirely on the ACO platform. That's my expectation.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Hey, let's move on. So another topic you brought up, and I got a question on this, but the direct detect market. So it's interesting. If I go back, it seems like when it was first announced, Microsoft Inphi at OFC, everybody kind of denied the ability to go 40 to 80K, right? But then since then, there's been more people announcing direct detect type of solutions. So just kind of quickly your thoughts on that market.
Yeah, I think it's an important niche market for the next couple of years. After 2018, after 2019, it remains to be seen, you know, whether it can hold off an incursion by Coherent and, you know, the advances that that technology is making in terms of power and cost and density. So, I mean, there is a couple of, you know, key customers that are going to buy things next year, but I think it's still, the jury is out on whether that becomes a widely adopted technology. And when I look at my models and, you know, how I've modeled out the adoption rate of direct detect is it's going to be more of a niche used by a couple of select service providers rather than something that's used in a widespread way. But, you know, I'll be the first to admit that there's a lot of uncertainty in that kind of a prediction at this point.
Yep. So it's kind of a, you know, to, you know, reword your comments, a Band-Aid solution for now, but coherence more flexible and better for getting to 200-plus speeds. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a Band-Aid. It's a very specific point product that solves a problem that needs to be solved right now.
Okay. All right, so then outside of Inphi, who's else is there, and any thoughts on the size of that market, maybe this year or next?
I think, you know, you've seen an announcement from Ranovus, and they're working with ADVA as part of their press release. And I think, you know, ADVA's pretty excited about that technology as well. But it really remains to be seen, you know, how widely adopted that approach is. I mean, you have companies like ADVA, which, you know, they have a long history of taking some of these, you know, corner case technologies and successfully introducing them into their customer base. And that's, you know, one of the things that's really made that company successful. But it, you know, whether or not you see guys like Ciena introduce it or Cisco, I think, you know, we're still some ways from seeing that happen.
Yep. Okay. And then it's interesting too, if you think about, or my thoughts, my observations is, you know, PAM4 was announced with this direct detect, and everybody kind of poo-pooed the idea, right? But since then, everybody's had some announcement with PAM4, right? I think there's been more broader.
Well, yeah, but PAM, there's, I mean, PAM4 is a vital technology for inside the data center and 2 kilometer types of reaches. And I think when you look at all the PAM4 announcements, you know, at the component level, the market that they're really aiming those at is, you know, 2 kilometers or less, and getting more bandwidth out of, you know, the 25 gig capable lasers that are out there. They're not going after this, you know, 80-kilometer market. This is, in terms of volume, it's just going to be a pimple on compared with what goes on inside the data center when they go from 100 G to 200 or 400 G.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my understanding too, right? It's inside the data center, PAM4 should be broadly deployed, right? And
yeah.
Interesting. And as far as leaders in that space, outside Inphi, Broadcom, anyone else we should watch?
I don't have a good idea of benchmarking and ranking the players, but you know, I know that APM is also in that market. I would expect that you'd see somebody like MACOM also, you know, having some sort of solution there to pair up with their optics. So I think there's still a lot going on there. But Inphi was really one of the companies that really went hard and fast into this market first.
Yeah, they did. That's correct. All right, we're a little over halfway. Andrew, I just want to pause and poll the audience and see if there's anybody that's got some questions that they'd like. So, Joanne, if you could just poll the audience, please.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound key. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions from the phone lines at this time. I would now like to hand the conference back to today's presenter. Please continue.
Yep. All right. Thank you for checking. Typical. We get a lot of emails, just not a lot of live Q&A. But so I've got a few more I want to ask here. This may be kind of out of order and jumping around a little bit, Andrew, but
okay.
Just to hit some of the inbound questions. So here it says, Andrew mentioned Huawei might be using Clarify IP. Any thoughts on whether Inphi might acquire Clarify, you know, or maybe what is the strategic logic of that combination?
I don't know. I mean, the fact is, if I knew anything, I couldn't say anything. But
can you speak to the strategic logic of?
Well,
Inphi
I think the thing is a DSP company. This is a major investment, right? I mean, Acacia's made this case that it's a major investment, and they're right. So for someone like Inphi to pick up a company like Clarify, obviously it always depends on price. But you're talking about a business that's going to burn a substantial amount of cash in the next couple of years. And so you need to make sure that you have enough sockets, enough design wins in order to justify the continued development in that area. So, I mean, strategically, I think it makes sense for someone like Inphi. I would argue it probably makes more sense for a component company, an optical component company, to take that approach. Someone like a Oclaro or a NeoPhotonics or a Finisar, because then they can, in essence, deploy the same model that Acacia's deployed. And that is, being able to closely couple all the optics and the DSP to sell a full subsystem, whereas Inphi can't really do that. So I think Inphi would struggle to really make the numbers work, would be my guess. And you would really need to in essence copy the same business model that Acacia has. And the companies that are best poised to do that are the folks who also have the discrete components.
Yep. Okay, fair. Hey, so I thought of another one on DCO that you just brought it up. We talked about competition for the DSPs. Now that we're getting more DSPs qualified here, I mean, what's the risk of new competitors having DCO offerings?
New companies introducing DCOs, such as Acacia?
Yeah, why doesn't Claro, why doesn't NeoPhotonics come out with a DCO product?
Oh, I think once NTT comes out with their low power, DSP, you are going to see that. I mean, if in fact there is a market for DCOs outside of Huawei, which I think that in itself is a big question, but let's just assume that there is, then yeah, absolutely, you would see people taking the NTT DSP and putting that into a module and selling it. And at that point, it just comes down to, you know, whether it has the same kind of performance as Acacia. And Acacia has a track record of really producing some very good product. So it's, could somebody go and build DCO? Sure. Could it be the same performance as Acacia? That I don't know.
Okay. Hey, so a few more questions lighting up my inbox here. I'm going to jump around here, but we hit this a little bit, but there's some more depth here. So how much demand is there for PAM4-related products from the hyperscale players? Obviously, we know about ColorZ, Microsoft announcement, but when does Andrew expect single Lambda PAM4 solutions to come to market?
Oh, I think you're probably talking about inside the data center. I haven't really spent enough time on that to form an opinion. So the shorter answer is I don't know.
Don't know. Okay. Let me keep jumping. So now we've had a couple of guys shoot me questions about Infinera. And I know that's a topic you know well. So could you just talk about, here's a question. Does Andrew have any thoughts on Infi's new products for DCI and Metro? Can Infinera, I said Infi. Infinera's new products for DCI and Metro, can Infinera catch up on DSPs and the PICs in time to participate in the Metro and 400G?
Yeah, I think the short answer to that is yes. Infinera was late to 100G, and they ended up coming out with a product that was significantly better than what other people had at the time. And the issue with Infinera is that their cycle time in terms of R&D is too long. They take several years to reload the gun and, you know, update their picks. And my understanding is that, you know, Tom Fallon and the folks there are now changing the way they approach this so that they don't have these four-year cycle times in terms of technology evolution. But if you look at the product that they've announced, it's very compelling. And, you know, if they can get that working and out to market, my feeling is that you could have a repeat of what you saw in the 100 gig market, where they were late, but they came out with a great product. And the types of systems that they're building are well suited to where the demand is coming from, these very high density point-to-point connections. Plus, they've made a lot of changes to the PIC architecture that makes it much more suitable for the Metro, whereas before, it really wasn't suitable for lower cost Metro use. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's entirely possible. It comes down to the ability to execute and deliver the product, and I can't comment on that.
Okay. Okay, so another one on Infinera. It says, seems Infinera won't have 200G 16-QAM product out until next year. Is that a strong positive for ACO market?
I don't know the exact date when Infinera is going to have this product out. Regardless of whether they, you know, are successful or not, there's going to be a good market for the ACOs because outside of China, that's really the format that everyone has adopted. People are either using an Acacia solution or they're using their own DSP or an Acacia DSP and putting an ACO in front of it. So that's, unless you expected Infinera to take over the market, there should be a substantial market for ACOs, and I don't think anyone's predicting that's going to happen.
All right, that's fair. All right, another one here, and someone kind of been on multiple calls, I can tell by his questions. He said, previously, Andrew said 20,000 ACO shipments in 2016. If we're now at 6K, is that 20,000 still possible, or what is your new projection?
No, I think it was too high. I think there was demand for 20,000. I think the issue is it just hasn't been the supply. I mean, if we were to rewind the clock a year ago, I think the expectation was that there'd be other people out there providing product, and that just hasn't happened.
So do you have a new forecast for ACO shipments this year?
I don't, but I mean, it really comes down to what Oclaro can build in Q4. They're going to be able to sell anything they can make.
Yep, exactly. All right. And any new thoughts on Lights, Lumentum's ACO development?
I haven't heard too much in terms of what they're doing there. I think if you've been reading their conference calls, you're familiar with you know, they've taken a much longer approach. My guess is that they're, you know, they may be bypassing the existing, you know, 100G, 200G ACOs and really, you know, targeting the next step, which is going to be 400G, or at least going to an architecture that, you know, can run a 200G and scale the 400G. But that's really the roadmap for ACO, is this transition from 200 to 400G, starting to see discrete components at 400G. The next is going to be, you know, 400G ACOs in the CFP2 form factor. And then you're also going to see 200G ACOs in an even smaller form factor called OSFP. That's what people seem to be sort of centering on. And it was a proposal that was put together by Arista. But it's reasonable to think that maybe in 18 months, 2 years, you're going to be able to get 200 gigs of coherent capacity in something that's, you know, only slightly larger than a QSFP 28 today.
Well, all right. Hey, you know, one thing I had written up for a question I wanted to ask you is I'm starting to hear more about CFP8 and, you know, or the LR8 module.
Yep.
To my knowledge, that's, you know, 400G, but probably more of a router interface.
Yep.
Is that close? Is that something important to watch?
The very first modules, like very prototype modules, were actually on the floor at ECOC. So I would expect to see a lot of activity at OFC. Next year, you know, people making product announcements around that product. But, you know, from a volume perspective, what's really interesting about that is it is prototyping all the technology needed to really cut the cost of 100G Ethernet by using PAM4, because they leverage all the PAM4 and they leverage all the higher speed optics in the CFP8. So all the development that's being done for CFP8 can be repurposed for the 100G market, and that's where it's really going to be big in terms of volume. And you're going to see a shift in terms of the type of technology that's used inside the data center from, you know, 25 gig per wavelength to 50 gig per wavelength. And the CFP8 is, you know, just one vehicle for how that's going to happen.
Is there anyone close? Is there someone that's going to have a, you know, competitive lead here? Or is it just still too early to tell?
Yeah, I don't have an opinion on that.
Yeah, okay. I was just asking, because typically if you get a time-to-market advantage like the ACOs, right, from Oclaro, you can really help the business. But, hey, a couple more questions here. I got a bunch, actually. Can you please ask Andrew his view on Ciena's business in the near term as well as over 2017? I know he commented on Verizon ramping for Ciena now, but curious about thoughts on Ciena's overall business and supply chain.
I think that if you look at from a macro perspective, you take away China. This year, actually, it really hasn't been that good from a spending perspective. And I think that there's been some, in essence, some pause as people wait for these new 200G technologies to come to market. And, you know, Verizon's an example, or a little bit later than what people originally expected. The cable MSOs are really want to get their hands on a lot of this 200G technology. So once it's now in production, I think that next year is going to be better for the West, particularly in North America. And, you know, Ciena is the, you know, the big proxy and bellwether for the overall market, because they sell to so many different types of customers and to so many different markets. So my feeling, you know, without using any numbers, is I would think that Ciena's business next year is going to be significantly better than this year.
Yep, right there. Okay, so I got two questions about DCOs and what it means to NeoPhotonics. You know, here's one of them. They're about the same. But does the hard shift to DCO mean that Neo is a net share loser at Huawei?
Well, I think it depends on whether they're designed into the CFP. And I don't know the answer to that question. I got a sense that Oclaro was playing a role in the CFP at Huawei. And I would have a very hard time believing that Neo is also not there, given the relationship that they have with that customer. And obviously, Huawei is going to have more than one source for the components that are in there. So, I mean, if I had to guess which two suppliers are going to be supplying the majority of the content of those modules and the components, it would be Oclaro and Neo. And that's a guess.
Fair. Yep. So here's the other question. Sounds like a little bit of a clarification request. So is NTT supplying all the components for Huawei's DCO, and Huawei is using HiSilicon's DSPs, or is it NTT's DSPs? Is there any opportunity for NeoPhotonics?
All right, so I'll be clear. What Huawei has communicated to me is that they're using their own DSPs in the CFP DCO, and NTT Electronics doesn't really make the other components that sit in front of the DSP. They do make some optical components, but I don't think they're playing a role there. I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
I believe that NTT Electronics is shipping some DSPs and will continue to ship some into Huawei, but I don't know if they're also going to be inside the CFP. But according to Huawei, they're exclusively using their own DSPs going forward.
Gotcha. Understood. When do you think NTT's DSP will come out?
I don't know. I would expect that they have several in development. They're going to be coming out with a lower power version of the products that they have now that I think would enable higher density 200 gig types of solutions, maybe even 200 gig CFPs or CFP2s in DCO format. But they also have other products in development that, you know, I don't know the details of.
Yep. All right.
But, I mean, I guess to be specific, my expectation is you're going to see a lot of 400G DSP announcements between now and around OFC.
OFC, yeah, that makes sense. Has Andrew met with ZTE? Any rundown on their strategy, demand, or how they're evolving?
I haven't had any discussions with ZTE of late. I will share something that's a little bit interesting about ZTE. My understanding is that, I know that ZTE used to purchase DSPs from both NTT and from Acacia. And, you know, one of the questions has always been, well, what's the mix? You know, how much is ZTE buying from NTT versus Acacia? And I never really knew that. But one of the things I learned in Dusseldorf was that, you know, ZTE has pretty much converted all of their production to Acacia on the DSP side, and NEL has essentially kind of backed away from that client. The speculation, and this is speculation, I haven't been able to actually determine this, but I've seen behavior like this in the past in China, is that, you know, NTT has done some sort of a deal with Huawei to be a supplier, and that's, you know, if as a result of doing that, they're not going to be providing things to ZTE.
But one or the other, huh?
Yeah, but my expectation is at this point, you know, Acacia really owns a big part of the ZTE account, and what I don't know is how ZTE plans to deal with the shift to CFP. They do have a history of emulating what Huawei does, so I would expect they're also going to be, you know, looking at, you know, how do they, you know, start shipping CFP DCOs. And, you know, in their current position, their only real option is going to be to source those from Acacia, would be my expectation.
Okay. Here's a timely question, given you just got back from Europe, but we heard about Orange starting their upgrade. Anything big going on with the European telcos, and how are their ramp compared to the China ramp?
Haven't really heard much on the European telcos, one way or the other.
Okay, I think that's fair. Do you have a market size for the DCO market in 2017?
Yeah, basically, you know, it's going to go, you know, from something that's pretty, you know, pretty small. I mean, I think, Acacia talked about shipping, 8,000 units last quarter? The majority of those went to ADVA. And so the consumption of the DCO module is outside of ADVA is pretty minimal. So it's growing from a small number, and I would expect that almost all that growth is going to come from Huawei. And the shipments that they make. So I don't necessarily think that's Acacia DCOs, but you know, the DCO market could be 30, you know, let's say 40, 50,000 units next year. But you know, it's very dependent on what ABBA does and whether they convert from using the DCOs to the 400G modules from Acacia. And my expectation is that's what they're going to do.
Okay. All right, a couple more here, Andrew. It's going back to a question. So for the direct detect market, has anyone other than Microsoft announced that they're going to deploy this?
No.
Okay. And then I got a couple of questions here on QSFP28 demand and supply. I know we haven't spent much time on that yet. I know that's not as much your expertise, but probably got some...
Yeah, there was an interesting thing on QSFP28. One of the things that appears to be going on is that the webcos, the big guys, have actually been purchasing CFP2s because they can't get the QSFP28s. The supply has been so constrained, you know, they've been also buying some of the larger modules in order to get things to work. So there's obviously a lot of demand for QSFP28. I don't have a number on that market, but there has been some demand for the CFP2s as a result of the supply being so constrained in the QSFP28 market.
Do you think this constraints on QSFP28 is helping out 40 gig transceivers too?
I would expect, yeah, because you know the short answer to the question is, I don't know. The long answer is, if people can't convert over to 100G because there's not the optics, then yeah, they're going to continue to keep buying 40G. That's the logical conclusion.
Yep, makes sense. All right, so then another one here. It's how is Corent share for 100G new builds?
How is what share?
Corent.
Corient?
Corient, thank you.
Corient has a couple new products that are just coming to market. I don't know what their share and participation right now is pretty minimal in the 100G market. I think you know, they've been actively pursuing you know, upgrades at AT&T with their product, and my understanding is they've been very aggressive in terms of pricing out in the marketplace. But you know they have new products that are coming to market that really represent the growth potential for 100G, and that's their Groove product, and there is a new long haul blade for their WDM system. Both of those are based on both of those are based on Acacia DSPs. In the case of the Groove, they use ACO optics. And in the case of the WDM system, they have their own in-house discrete design.
All right. Couple more here. you may not know this, but I'll run this past. Have you heard any updates on Huawei's issue with the U.S. Department of Commerce? Probably similar with ZTE. Thoughts on the trade restriction stuff?
Don't know anything about that. I'm only aware of what was going on with ZTE.
Okay. Just a couple more here, and we'll let you go. Guy says, does Andrew have a view on Acacia for 2017?
No, I don't. I'm not going to go there.
You gave a lot of bits and pieces that we can kind of.
Yeah, I think Acacia is. Their success is a function of the success of their customers. So they depend on what happens at ZTE and at ADVA and at Corient. And beyond that, their success is going to depend on their ability to penetrate other accounts and bring them in-house. One of those is Cisco. Just if I had to do the math, I don't think that Cisco is going to be hugely material next year, would be my guess. And the other thing is the ACO module. And that's going to be exceptionally interesting from an engineering perspective because we've never had a head-to-head indium phosphide versus silicon photonics shootout, and that's what we're going to get with their silicon photonics ACO.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I got two more that popped in, and I'll let you go. But it says, how are demand trends shaping up among cloud service providers? How much of an impact will hyperscale players have on the optical market in the second half of this year and next year?
I mean, I haven't heard of any changes in demand from them. I think there's technology shifts that are underway, and the big one is the transition to 100G. And it appears that that's limited. You know, that's a function of how much volume they can get at what price. And once the QSFP hits a certain volume threshold at the right price, I would expect that those guys, they transition pretty fast.
Yeah, so, and so if they can get capacity. Like you said, they're buying CFP, CFP2s, right?
Right. So once that supply is in place at the right price, then I think you're going to see a very big move to 100G away from 40G pretty quickly. And the thing that's different this time is when there was a transition from 10 gig to 40G, it was sort of, you know, not everyone moved at the same time. Now it's evident that all these guys are ready to go as soon as they have the supply. So I think that, that the transition is going to be more dramatic this time.
All right, last question, I promise. What is Acacia supplying into Cisco, and for what applications?
Acacia is supplying the DSP to Cisco, and they use that in the NCS 4000, which is, you know, used for the Verizon business.
The Verizon business, you said?
Yep.
The Metro? Okay. And but Cisco has their own DSP, but they're, is this a 1 plus 1 strategy, or are they acknowledging that Acacia is better than what they had?
I think you know, Cisco decides to use whatever technology, you know, meets the requirements in the short term. And I guess that Acacia had a better product for the Verizon business. They're using their own DSP for the DCI box, which can do 250 gig per wavelength. I think, you know, Cisco's probably going to revisit the decision of using internal versus external when they go to 400G.
Okay. Andrew, that was fantastic. Really appreciate the time, and your insight's great. I personally think we're going to have a great earning season here. There's been just too much healthy demand and high-margin business, and we're going to see revenue upside and healthy margin expansion, and it still feels like it's early in this stuff. So, but give us a couple weeks, and we'll start to see some earnings results if there's not pre-announcements. But thank you so much for your time, and we'll be in touch.
Okay. Thanks, Troy.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, everyone.